We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Aikman is intercepted by Sam Mills.
Steve Smith is going to go all the way. Panthers win in overtime.
Newton steps up, goes for the end zone. Olsen, touchdown.
The touchdown by Moore.
He pounded on three. 1, 2, 3.
He pounded.
Welcome to another episode of The Roar, brought to you by Blue Wire. Your host, Billy Marshall, joined as always by my co-host, John Ellis, coming to you Tuesday after a pretty exciting World Cup game for the U.S. soccer. We're not going to break that down, but just wanted to let you guys know. And John, what's up, man?
I'd be lost, man. I'd be following your lead. But yeah, congrats the U.S. And hey, congrats the Panthers, those who are still fighting for their jobs out there with this team. Impressive win, especially on defense, and an interesting game by Sam Darnold. Got a lot to talk about here, man. Good to be back with you.
Yeah, for sure. Certainly a lot to talk about in the wake of the a victory against the Denver Broncos.
By the way, a victory you predicted. Sorry to interrupt, but you were very clear about this. They were going to win this game, Billy.
Yeah. You know, we don't give betting advice here at all. But it was just the line didn't make sense to me. Denver was a three-win team. Carolina's a three-win team. Denver's has all sorts of issues. And yeah, I did not understand the line from a gambling perspective. I thought Carolina should have been the team favored. They weren't. And yeah, let's get right into it. Certainly a game that, you know, this team, like a game script that they need to follow on offense in order for them to be successful, and they were. I was not intimidated one bit by the Denver offense in any way, shape, or form. I thought as soon as it was 3-0, you know, I genuinely believe Carolina could win this game. I know Latavius Murray had that long run, but besides that, I just was not intimidated in any way, shape, or form by this Denver team. That's a team that is just going in the wrong places. You have players on the field ready to fight. You have a quarterback making a crazy amount of money, head coach who's way in over his head.
It's so bad.
And I just want to be careful about, like, you know, the analysis that we're trying to, you know, convey here. And I want to be clear, you know, yes, you should also realize the contingents, or at least the some of the issues that Denver has in regards to, you know, how Carolina played, but that it shouldn't take away necessarily the performance on the field. Again, I expected it from an offensive point of view, defensive point of view. Offensively, I think you have to start, the performance of Sam Darnold was probably, you know, the best performance by him in a Panthers uniform. I mean, I know he had that the first three games last year, but if we're considering the opponent, the Denver defense, and, you know, just his first start in a while, and I certainly thought he played well. I mean, he made a couple big time throws, the one to DJ Moore down the sideline, then the touchdown throw to DJ Moore. I mean, it does seem that him and DJ have a pretty good connection. You know, Darnold, when they traded for him, it was way back in March of 2021. So that gave him an opportunity to work with DJ all throughout that offseason and even last year and this year. So I think Baker was a little unlucky in that regard. I'm not going to get into that. But
yeah,
at the same time, Darnold played well. But I don't necessarily think it was like they still had a lot of drive. There was still 2 of 12 on third down. So it's still an offense that, in my opinion, is not great. But
right.
As far as just Sam Darnold, I thought he played well, and you have to give him credit for that.
Yeah, you do. I mean, look, just as we were talking about this on a show, I think last week, Billy, right before Thanksgiving, I keep using the same line. I can't believe we're here a year later talking about Sam Darnold about to start for the Panthers again. But, you know, we went to this game, my son and I, and, you know, just on a personal note, he's a fan. You know, I try to do my best to keep it down the middle here. I've always done that, Billy, you know that. But it was fun. I will admit, to be, you know, like 12 rows up, there were good seats. The seats were gettable because the record is what it is, and those are pretty cheap seats at the bottom rim. And if you saw what was going on in the stands, it was heavy orange, and that's always satisfying to go up there, get a dub, and you can send them home, and it was a fun crowd. But back to Sam. There's a lot to digest here offensively and even defensively on this game, but I was really encouraging to see not only Darnold, you know, in the pocket and in what was – pretty much clean pockets. By the way, hats off to, I would suppose, Campen and McAdoo and Wilkes for orchestrating a little XT personnel with Cade Mays and Irving. That was probably smart against this defense. A lot of max protection, and they just let Darnold get into the pocket. He did a nice job climbing. He was comfortable. He never really got rattled. And he only threw, like, I think, like 20 times, 19 times. It was the formula that Steve Wilkes has got to follow with this team. There's a narrow margin for error here. Obviously, you can't throw 40 times with this team. But no, Sam back in there, you know, he's got the beard cooking. He threw that ball to DJ down the boundary, and that was like 13 personnel max protect. And I don't know if you saw the clip. I'm sure you did. But he's holding the release like a fadeaway, like Steph Curry. I mean, that's just little stuff I noticed from the game that was like, all right, this is kind of cool. You know, Sam's back out there connecting with DJ. And I think you're right, Billy. I mean, there's something there with Mayfield and Moore that, and whether it's fair or not, they're just not connecting, and they didn't connect. And I think Sam clearly, at least for right now, until further notice, is the starting quarterback. PJ's binged up and he's struggled a little bit. And I don't want to see Baker again right now. I've just seen enough of that. It was encouraging. Offensive line looked good. But yeah, I mean, it's the kind of game they had to play. 2 of 12 on, you know, third downs, that's obviously got to be better. Denver, though, Billy, this is like, and I don't want to take anything away, like you said, from what Carolina's doing. Steve Wilkes is undefeated at home. That means something. They've been great in the division so far. They finally get a win outside the division. So hats off. It's not easy. They're losing staff members left and right. It's kind of going back to the Ron Rivera days where things were falling apart in 17, and Wilkes has kind of been through this and knows how to stem this tide. So I'm proud of Steve Wilkes, man. I'm happy for him. But the Broncos, until you see it in person, man, it's so bad. Like, the whole operation. Just the communication issues. The Russell is just, it feels like, Billy, he's on another planet from his team. Like, you know what I mean? And until you're there in that environment, you can, and I saw Russell play in 15 in the playoff game there. Totally different, because obviously he's in rhythm and sync at that point. They lost, but he was great in that game. But man, he's just creating his own sacks again. He's running in circles like a moron. And I hate to be critical of it, but he's just turned into kind of a hoser. He's just kind of this guy that, and who is it? Who's the lineman that got up in his face? Because I did not see that until we watched the broadcast copy. Is it Purcell, the lineman? It got right up in his grill and was like, I don't know what he said, but clearly Hackett has lost control of it, and it's early, and that's Denver's problem. But no, Carolina defensively, we'll get into it. They were 4 of 14 on third down. They've gotten better in that department over the past 3 weeks. And, hey, they're trending up, man. A lot of good things going on. And they're playing their young guys, Billy. That's what I love.
Yeah, so it was Purcell. Again, I don't know what was said. Supposedly Russell Wilson said something like it's Russell Wilson time or something. I don't know. Oh. That's what Nathaniel Hackett said.
God,
I that could be some type of weird tweet that went out.
Oh, it's so, I mean, we think it at least kind of we're on the flip side of what feels like the poverty low. It's so bad because you put all that money into Wilson. I know this is a Panthers podcast, but just I bared witness to it in person. I'm not sitting on my ass at home. Like, that was just so weird to see a guy that was a quintessential, like, Super Bowl contender quarterback year after year, and then he's suddenly in Denver going to do the Manning thing, of course, like Peyton did. No, you're going to come here and you're going to throw spikes into the ground because your screen game's covered up and the routes suck and no one's open and he's running around creating his own sacks and Burns and LeVue are chasing your ass around it. It was satisfying. I will say that. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think that was just some type of meme on Twitter, so I don't think he actually said that. But
okay. At this point,
and again, football is an emotional game.
I wouldn't doubt it. Yeah, it is emotional.
So again, people are in the, they're in. They have so much testosterone built up, and they're always in like the right mindset. So, but still, at the same time, that kind of. I don't know. Just the energy from that sideline didn't look great.
It was terrible. And they had a good contingent of fans, and even the fans felt like Russell. Usually Broncos fans are pretty sure of themselves, and they're 6-1 all time against the Panthers. They beat us in the Super Bowl. I mean, and they just kind of walked in like it was the Green Mile. Like, oh, here we go again, and we've been there. So it was good to come out on the winning side, especially with my son there. I mean, those are good moments. And, hey, you know, DJ Moore's his favorite player, and DJ Moore caught four big ones and got in the end zone twice. And Sam, man, good throw on that first one. I mean, he's backpedaling and throws it a little dime there in the corner, and then the go route there to the – and then the stop, drop, and roll touchdown, of course. That's just vintage Carolina. So it was an interesting day in the bank.
Yeah, for sure. Game script-wise, 41 carries between Deontay Foreman and Chuba Hubbard. I mean, that's sort of, how – they want to play for better or worse. And it's not like either of them necessarily had a spectacular yards per carry. But I think that when you have two guys that know their role and they just run the ball, within their style, I think that's just the sort of the mindset you're going to get. And I think at points of the second half when the game was like, 17-3, 23, and 23-3. I mean, they were just trying to play out the string and get through the game as much as anything. So it didn't necessarily call for, dropping back as much as, other people might anticipate. But it was fine.
Well, especially like you said, three was kind of enough. I mean, I know they got the one late, but I mean, and the official, too, that's Hockey Lee's son. Boy, it's a rough watch with him because it's everything is like a five-day trial, like every flag. But I digress. Look, Denver, they're terrible. The defense is very good. Obviously, that was probably not number two's best day out there for their side, but he's still a very good player. And that was some good competition going out there between Moore and Surtain, so I enjoyed that thoroughly. Denver's just kind of limited right now on offense, obviously, and their special teams got their ass kicked. Tabor had, other than the fumble, I mean, they had a really nice day. Hecker was great. Congrats to J.J. Jansen. He's tied John Casey for all-time games played, and obviously defensively they're doing a good job right now. They're playing good football.
Yeah, for sure. Offensive line-wise, I thought Equano didn't necessarily have his best game. He's kind of struggled the past couple of weeks, which – again, he's a rookie, so you're not going to necessarily see the highs of his game that you saw like in the middle of the year. So just one thing to keep in mind. I thought the overall unit as a whole, they played fairly well. But at the same time, the game plan was to just get the ball out, run the ball. They didn't do too many 5-7-step drops. There was that play in the first quarter, I think, when Darnold missed like a wide open DJ Moore, but he just like stood in the pocket and waited, and he did that thing that he usually does, which is
double
his feet.
Clutch.
His feet just go crazy. He did find a wide open receiver down that sideline. I don't know who was it. I think it could have been DJ Moore.
I think Was it the seven route? Was it the corner route that he just missed and DJ drug his feet and didn't get in? Is that the one you're talking about?
Well, there was a route in the first quarter where he just threw it to a wide open receiver.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
After going through his progression like four or five times, no one covered him. And guy was just standing there. I think it was DJ Moore.
Yeah, I think I remember this one. Yeah, there's a little bit of that.
Third and two, darn
it. 3-2-1 and continue. Sorry about that.
Yeah, yeah. So it was like a progression that, you know, he went through like three or four reads and then found someone just wide open. But that's the sort of thing I'm talking about. Like the pass pro as a whole, they did well because Denver, they like to, you know, bring a lot of fire zone pressures and late linebacker blitzes. So overall, no issues with the offensive line. But just to point out Ekwonu, again, I thought he had some moments where he'd probably like to have back. But as a unit, I didn't really have an issue overall. They played pretty well, as you said earlier, too.
Yeah, I think Ekwonu, they're insulating him nicely. I mean, you could see what they're trying to do here. You know, the Cade Mays stuff early. And as an avid lover of Cade Mays, it's become a bit of a joke around here. But I do like the kid because he got the Greg Cosell stamp of approval on our show. So I ride with that. It was good to see, like I said, last year we're sitting here like, get Christensen some reps, get Deontay Brown some reps, whether it's good or bad. And they're finding creative ways to get like Cade Mays into the game, and that's good. And then I thought Cam Irving was effective. Like they lined him up sometimes as a sixth offensive lineman. There was a lot of 64 and 75 are eligible. And the more they said it, the happier I got. Because there were times like Ekwonu did not have, and he's yet to really have that kind of game. You're like, damn, he's arrived. But it's okay. I mean, your first year, it's been a mess. You've changed head coaches. He wasn't mauling people like I've seen him at times in the run game in this game. But that's just a first glance. I have to go back and look again at it. I thought he was fine, but like really Bozeman has just settled in nicely inside. Moten was just a rock. And I think to your point about the passing game, like they didn't drop back and throw a lot of deep patterns, but when they did, it was a lot of, you know, 6-7 man protection. And I thought it was an effective plan, you know, mitigate what, you know, and eliminate what they can do to you. And obviously it's pressure packages and rely on your playmakers to win in space. And DJ had a day, man. He played well. And credit Sam, man. It's, we've only seen a few passes like that, Billy, since 2020 around here. And I'm not even being hyperbolic here. It's like hyperbolic, however the hell you say it. It's like PJ's pass in Atlanta.
Yeah, I don't think any passes.
Nothing tops that. That's the GOAT of all throws this decade for the Panthers. And that's deceiving because this decade has been pure shit. But anyway, we take it. That was probably right up there in the top three. And, you know, credit to Darnold, credit to the line. And DJ came out of the tunnel fired up. He was ready to roll. I think the energy on the sidelines, we were right behind the Panther sidelines. And I've been to hundreds of these games, Billy, literally since 96. And I've seen teams at 3-8, and they're just, boy, there's nothing. And it's just like it's a veteran team, and they're mailing that shit in. And there was some good juice on that sideline, man. Winning cures a lot. And we'll worry about the draft when we get there. Obviously, you and I can't control where they finish in that. And I think Houston's well on their way to Bryce Young. Let's just say that.
Yeah. I don't know. That's a different discussion.
Yeah.
It's, given, you know, some people's opinion on these quarterbacks.
I know. Yeah. I mean, I don't have an opinion yet. I will say this, that I think Trevor Lawrence is certainly commanding himself as like a bona fide number one overall pick the way he played last week, but that's neither here nor there. You missed out on Lawrence, you missed out on Herbert, and hopefully eventually they get their guy. But I mean,
and your boy JF,
Justin Fields, huh? Woof, yeah, that would, yeah, okay. Well, I like JC Horn. See, this is what I hate, Billy, about social, about message boards and these assholes who, I'm sorry, folks, some of you. It's like you'll tag J.C. Horn. If like somebody comes out and says, man, Fields, well, J.C. Horn, look at Ellis is on your ass. I'm like, yeah, real professional guys. Thanks a lot. But J.C. gets it. I've been around these players. Look, Fields, I don't want to get on a tangent here. That draft's over. Fields is fine. He's doing a good job up there. Oh, eventually they'll find somebody. Maybe Caleb Williams in 2 years. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
Thank you for letting me rant.
So, defensively, I was not surprised with this performance one bit. Again, Denver's a mess. Their offensive line is all over the place. Yeah. You know, their skill guys outside of Courtland Sutton, again, very questionable given the injuries that they have. You know, Tim Patrick got injured in training camp and missed the entire year, and Judy just recently got injured. So they're just very limited. And then given the other factors that are involved with the schematic problems and also the quarterback that they paid $245 million to is regressing.
Meanwhile, Kendall Hinton's probably their best quarterback. He's out there catching balls.
He looks like actually a pretty decent player as a receiver. I'm actually interested in him if he ever becomes like a free agent. But but yeah, just it was set up right for them because we've commended this defense has certainly kind of turned a corner since giving up 42 points to Cincinnati. One of the games was against against an Atlanta offense that struggles on the road and especially in torrential weather. You saw those issues kind of come to its head against Washington on Sunday, and then you obviously have last week's game against probably one of the worst offenses in the league. I saw a stat that they're averaging like some of the worst points per game like of the decade or something, like 14.3.
Denver,
and then obviously you played well against Lamar Jackson in the Ravens a couple weeks ago, so they're doing pretty good work against two, in my opinion,
it's mid.
Let's say one bad offense, one mediocre offense, and one good offense.
They're doing what they have to do. I mean, these are crappy teams, and they're making them look like crap for the most part. It's kind of par for the course. I agree. It's not great competition. So I think if they win against Philly, that would be a different story maybe because, boy, the stuff they're running is ripe for, like, gashing, but they don't have to worry about that right quite yet.
But overall, I think you can commend just their performance overall. I thought, certainly – Brian Burns stepped up as he's had the past few weeks.
Had a good day.
Again, defensively, this was a game that they had to meet their expectations and their performance in, and they did.
Yeah, they did. Burns, we've covered that, so I don't want to spend too much time, singing his praises. Burns expects to go out and do well. Obviously, we know his story pretty well, and he had a very good game against a team he should have had a good game against. And, if you're there and you get a sense when you're in the stadium, I mean, it's so damn quiet now because, I should say this. They do a good job of amping up with a very, very loud, loud amplification with their speaker system. It is so loud, and that's fine. But anyway, the stadium itself, you can hear a lot of what's going on, and Burns brings a lot of energy on that field. I thought he got hurt pretty bad for a minute when he threw his helmet. I was glad he came back in the game. Two sacks. It was good to see the strip sack, the takeaway. I, at the time, we're sitting right there in that corner of the end zone, and it kind of like, hey, that's probably something you ought to look at and review. And luckily, Hockley threw us a bone there and said, hey, we'll give you that one. Marcus Haynes is good, man. I keep, singing his praises situationally. They come in and give him, a handful of snaps a game in the pass rush. He's averaging the last 3 weeks, Billy. I did a little research for once. Like one sack every 20.5 pass rush snaps. And, again, competition being relatively, low key the last few weeks, but still the last three games as a whole, he's been good. I keep seeing this narrative that, and I know Barno flashes and he's out there a gunner. First of all, I think this is much different than Brian Burns at gunner. It's a good idea to get him out there because he's like the 189th pick. And let the athlete get out there and learn how to play every position. I'm fine with it. He's very good at it, by the way. And then there's like a narrative, too, that Barno, he's going to be replacing YGM. I still think YGM is doing a pretty good job here. I mean, there's little things that here and there, I know run gashes happen, but like there were some stunts they ran in that game and some twists, and he didn't get the sacks or anything, but he had two hurries on the quarterback. He had a fumble recovery, and I just thought it was a whole, like, you see guys still like Sam Franklin on defense and special teams. Henderson had a better game, albeit against not guys like CeeDee Lamb and company, but, fair enough. LeVue continues. Shaq's having a low-key, very good year, and they're very good in the trenches right now. I mean, I'll say this. I know they got gashed against Cincy. That shit happens. I mean, bad day to have a bad day, John Fox, I guess you can say, but on offense and defense, they don't suck in the trenches anymore. I'll say that. I'm not willing to say, hey, it's time to gas it up and we're ready to go, playoff bound next year or this year. But they got a pretty good rotation of guys up front on both sides. And defense, you know, Burns is here, whether we agree with it or not, and I know we had opinions on it that could go either way, but hey, they're here, they're balling, and they made Denver look like Denver and a half. It was so bad. And congrats to Steve Wilks and Al Holcomb for putting together a game plan on what's suddenly kind of a shorthanded staff now with Terrence Knighton. I think I heard he's leaving with Matt Rhule to Nebraska. And
he already announced it on his Twitter feed.
Okay, well, there's that. And then, you know, Evan Cooper's obviously been dismissed, and he'll probably end up there too, the whole gang. But, you know, I think Steve's doing a good job here. Great job. I don't know. That's not for me to decide, but obviously it's going to get interesting the rest of the season. I don't want to keep doing this, Billy, but they're a game and a half back, and they have the tiebreaker. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I'm gonna. When their playoff odds are above 30%,
I know. I was doing that.
I'll start taking that seriously.
I'm not banking on it, but it's at least fun to win a game, I guess.
Special teams. It was a little bit of an issue, I would say, in this game. I mean, I know Pinheiro made all of his kicks, but Blackshear fumble. I know you had some. We've had some issues with Shai Smith and his fumbling on those punts. And then they also allowed Denver to recover an onside kick.
Yep.
Now, to their credit, they did force a fumble on a Denver kickoff. So, deserve credit there. But
yeah,
it certainly wasn't perfect at all on special teams.
No, it wasn't. I mean, like, Hecker early on had a great punt, and it was one of those, you know, vintage Hecker deals. And it was like the Hecker... I think the most exciting combination these days in Carolina other than DJ to Sam is Hecker to 42. It's like Hecker to Franklin on the punt team, and they're getting them down inside the three. But it wasn't perfect. They did do the fake punt. That was pretty elementary. I think they had like an inch to go, and good block by J.J. Jansen, by the way. That was nice. But yeah, that was sloppy at the end, the onside kick. And I think that was actually Franklin who kind of had a hard time committing to it. Credit to Denver. And the Blackshear thing, I had a good angle of that in the stadium, and it looked doomed from the start. It's like, you know, if Parcells was there, he'd be, you know, how he was with his guys like Dedrick Ward back on those old clips. Like, come on, man. Well, you want to be a rabbit or you want to be a returner? And I like Blackshear, but he looked not ready to do it right quite yet like he needs to. I don't know what you do at this point. You got to play your young guys. Maybe Shai goes back in. Maybe I don't think you put DJ there, but not their best. But I still think Johnny Hecker is a hell of a pickup, and I'd like to keep him around here for a while.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree there. I think what makes the onside recovery worse is the fact that on turf it's supposed to be easier to actually collect those balls because on grass,
oh yeah,
it's good point. I mean, the field is softer and. You just never know, especially in a game where, you know, the field can be a little moist and it bounces, you know, weird or whatever.
It was a good kick by McManus, though. I mean, it really kind of threaded that needle, that 10, and they barely were able to get. And Franklin, I guess, I don't know. I mean, you got to look back at it and see. Franklin maybe committed too early, but you got guys screaming down your neck. It was, I'd say it's well executed, but like on turf, you're right. I never thought about that. That's a good point.
That's just a general point that I figured.
Yeah. Yeah, they got to clean that up. I'm sure. Oh, I see Tabor on the sidelines was pissed. So obviously that's not what they like to do here. I mean, it's something that and the fumbles on punts are the worst. I mean, remember the Burson game in the playoffs? Like that game almost got pissed away in 14 because you know, our friend Burson kept, you know, and God bless him, I love him, but man, that was a struggle bus that night in the fog, and that's just one of the worst feelings when, you know. Other than like having a kicker who can't make anything, or other than not having a quarterback, which, hey, been there, having a punt returner dilemma where guys are consistently fumbling, that can be problematic, and they should probably work on cleaning that up pretty soon.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, overall, a pretty solid effort on all three sides of the ball. There's some things to clean up as well. I would just think that the games that they've been winning, you know, it's not like they're blowing teams out, especially on offense. It's been mainly a formula where they're just having to stay ahead of the chains and playing in front. You know, that can obviously take you to success, as we've seen at home. And, you know, they haven't been able to face or overcome adversity I think is a good way to put it.
Good point.
Especially on the road.
It's like 0-2 Panthers, Billy. That's what it reminds me of a little bit. Like John Fox kind of knew what he had with Rodney Pete and Lamar Smith and a work in process offensive line and just take the air out of the ball. I'm not saying that's the right way to do it. I just think Wilkes is kind of like coming in saying, let's get our focus back here. We are going to be one thing. We're not going to change our identity every other day. That's what the last guy tried to do. Let's just stick to this shit. And hey, for better or worse, this is how it's going to play out. And I don't love it, but like, I get it. You know what I mean? It's just kind of where they're at with their construction right now, their framework of their offense.
Yeah, I mean, the one game where you did see them have, the opportunity to come back was against Falcons in Atlanta. But outside of that, it's been anytime they've kind of trailed in some of these games, it's been very tough sledding for them to.
Let me ask you something. You think, like, did Sam show you enough? I mean, it's a good defense he played. Do you think progressively they'll try to open it up a little bit down the stretch here for Darnold if he continues to start, given the fact the O-line has been, let's face it, about as good as it's been here for a few years? Could you possibly see them getting back to a more aggressive approach? Or is it just the fact that they got down against Atlanta and they had to play catch-up and that's what led to that? Because I'm kind of with you. It's like, it is 0-2 Panther-esque. It's like, let's bleed. And I said this earlier in the season. They just want to kind of bleed the clock out like that Rams game and just hope at the end you're on top, and that's just where they are. But I do wonder if they'll try to elevate Sam's pitch count, if you will. I don't even know where Sam is in their priority list. I guess he'll keep starting. It looks like he will.
I don't know. It's really tough to tell. You might as well just – I really don't have any preference. I think the other you might as well just rotate or figure out one of the two guys between – Walker and Darnold. Those two guys have been your best.
Yeah, I wish Corral was still around, but that sucks.
Yeah, two have been your best so far this season. So I really don't have a preference on which one you go with. The only thing I'll say is, it was a good performance, but it wasn't perfect by any stretch of the imagination.
No, I agree.
Times when, I mean, he started off pretty slow. He was like 1 of 4 for like 15 yards or 2 of something. So it... the biggest thing with him is just like the consistency. You still saw a lot of the mechanical problems in his lower half where he can kind of not set his feet correctly and drive the ball. So that's obviously a pattern that is just going to stick with him. But
19 throws is kind of like his sweet spot. It's kind of like if you go over 19 throws, you're chancing it with a pick six with him. That's kind of how it feels to me. That's kind of his threshold right now.
Yeah. So it's just as far as like this season goes, you might as well just continue to follow or at least, attempt to follow this game script where you're going to be running the ball and you're going to be trying to open it up and play action now. The benefits of Darnold in that respect is he probably has a stronger arm than PJ and he could probably deliver the ball on all three levels. I'm not to say PJ can, he obviously can, but I think that when I'm talking about like just how the ball should be coming out, like the velocity and the direction of it, I think PJ is a little too one speed in his delivery. The ball just always comes out at one speed, doesn't throw with the best touch in the world. But that's just minor observation.
You got three quarterbacks with a track record of disturbingly high turnover rates. I mean, that's just where they are. Baker being the least of those three, but ironically enough, he probably looked the worst. So that's what happens. Short time frame to get caught up. And training camp was kind of a mess. And Sam, 19 throws. He completed, 11 of them, I think. And he on a few of those, he looked really comfortable. So it's a short, small sample size. I'm satisfied with it. I'm like you. I just kind of picked your brain on that because I trust your opinion on a lot of this stuff, and I like to hear your perspective. But it's kind of where they're at, and Foreman's been effective. He's been a really good story, actually. I've enjoyed his contributions. He's not McCaffrey. Obviously, he's a different player, but he's effective for what they're trying to do with McAdoo. You see the stuff they're running in Philadelphia and some of the run concepts in San Francisco, and it's just kind of meat and potatoes, hammerhead football here. And it's not very attractive, but if it works, fine. keep milking the clock, get a couple touchdowns, and play good defense. And, hey, I'll say this, the defense is better with less time of possession against them. So, certainly good. And without Dante Jackson, they're holding their own back there. It's pretty good stuff.
Yeah, for sure. I'll just say this. With all due respect to Dante Jackson, I think that the secondary could probably use another player back there. And I thought, like you said, Henderson played pretty well today, last week.
Yeah.
But I'd be looking to upgrade cornerback too. Potentially try to figure out if Dante's really a guy you want to keep long term. But that's a discussion for another day.
Scott's got his hand. Well, if he's here, I think he'll be here. He's got his plate full.
Yeah, for sure. Moving forward, this team has a bye week, pretty late in the year, but one that they probably deserve. And then they close out the year with, five games, two of them to close out the year on the road in the division. But before that, they go to Seattle, face Pittsburgh and Detroit at home. And then, like I said, the two division games. Just my opinion, I really don't know where to go with this organization, like from an off-season perspective. Like, it's interesting. I'm reading reports about, has Steve Wilks made a good impression? And yeah, he certainly has. I mean, I don't know if he's going to be, the long-term, guy or not. But all I can say is, you follow a lot of sports. I follow a lot of sports too. Usually in the cases where you have interim head coaches, it doesn't really bode well when you promote them to the full-time guy.
Yeah. Not a good track record of that.
Yeah, there isn't. But I just think, I don't know. It's kind of like, I'm not endorsing it, obviously, but I mean, you might as well just keep him. I say that very reluctantly, nothing against the guy. I say it reluctantly because, I don't trust the owner to find someone better. And you just saw on Sunday, the opposite sideline, they hired the hotshot offensive guy.
Yes.
It didn't go well for them.
Billy, did you ever find yourself, honestly, have an honest moment here, because I stupidly kind of thought, hey, maybe Hackett could be good for them. Did you ever see any potential with him? Or was it Aaron Rodgers bait? Because you come out of that Green Bay system, it's like, What really are you other than, I don't know. I didn't know much about Hackett, but he appealed me with some of his energy, and then I kind of peeled it back in training camp, and it started feeling a little weird. I don't know. What was your impression of him?
My impression of Hackett was fairly neutral. I'll just go back to when he was the offensive coordinator in Jacksonville, the year they made it to the AFC Championship game with Blake Bortles.
Oh God!
I thought he did a pretty good job.
Remember that year, yeah.
Kind of constructing an offense around quarterback of Bortles' skill set. Bortles is the most accurate guy. He's a pretty mobile quarterback, but a lot of people like to make fun of him, for better or worse. But I never really always thought those were pretty harsh, treatment of the guy. But overall, he was, in my opinion, it's really tough, especially when you have a coordinator who doesn't call plays. Now, on the inverse side, I'll point to Kevin O'Connell. He didn't call plays for the Rams, and the Vikings are one of the best teams in the NFL, record wise. I know their underlying metrics are probably not the best right now, but I think wins and losses matter, and Kevin O'Connell seems to be a guy that really has the pulse of that team. And I watch some of those post-game locker rooms that he does. He seems like a very smart guy who's a leader of men, and I think that's important. O'Connell obviously was a former player too. Hackett, he's a son of a coach, so it's just so difficult.
It's
because
tough.
Like, I can sit here and I can tell you, go hire Matt Rhule. He turned around two college programs, and again, I know other people had issues with the Rhule hire. I liked it, but you look at just someone of these the track records of coaches who don't work out, I think it's very easy to, project how, some of the retread guys will do, like a Doug Peterson or a Mike McCarthy, guys who have been through it before, even, Yeah, I know he had some struggles early on, but they've won two in a row, two overtime games. So he seems to have, you know, his team back on the track. I just think with these, it's with some of these coordinators, whether it's offensive, defensive, or special teams, even, it's just so tough to project, especially us on the outside. And even if we were interviewing them, like, how do we like actually get the right?
Well, to me, idea? Like, I'll be honest with you. I was pretty neutral about the Matt Rhule thing because, like, we were all kind of, I think, understanding that Ron and Tepper were going to part ways. Tepper wanted his own guy. And, you know, he interviewed McCarthy, and I kind of gave him some grief on that. But you raised some good points about Mike McCarthy. He's turned out pretty well, and that wouldn't have been the worst thing in the world. My only thing about Tepper, or my only thing about Rhule, is it just kind of felt, I don't know, like this whole thing hadn't worked before, and I don't really want to wait around 3 years and just reset this when the odds are just based on, you know, Saban and every Patrice. I'm not saying Matt's the same, but this shit usually doesn't work. You got to have some bona fides in this league to make it work. And then the staff he put together, it was kind of like, with no disrespect to any of them, it felt clunky. The COVID thing happened. I know he's talked about that a little bit. I just think moving forward, it's like, if Wilkes is the guy, I'm like you, go with it, but let's shake it up a little bit and let Steve work with whoever's in charge of the roster or in charge of operations, I'm assuming Scott, and you might want to start shopping for a new OC. I'm, you know, just saying that's, I don't know. Ben's done okay, but I don't know if that's what you want long-term. And it's weird, Billy. They're in a weird place because, like I said, their offensive line is emerging and improving, and I'm kind of confident it's going to become a strong point long-term. Now, that could fall apart, but right now it looks good. The defense, the front seven feels good. You got a good corner in J.C. Horn. You got a good safety in Chin. You can build around some of these pieces, but like, and they're finally getting some depth, but they have very little competency at quarterback, and they have a lot of question marks about what's going to be next in terms of leadership. And I wonder if it's, you know, like the Sean Payton thing still feels like way out of Carolina's league, even though Tepper's got the money. Like, what would entice Sean Payton or the Saints to want to do any of that with Carolina? I just don't. Sean Payton's got better things to do. He could wait around for a year or two if he needs to. Maybe Jim Harbaugh. Maybe Jim Harbaugh. Maybe he swings big. I don't know. I have no idea who Tepper wants anymore.
Well, that's why I'm not. That's why you just can't close the college door, because Harbaugh would be a tremendous hire.
Well, no, that's a different college door, Billy. You know that. I mean, that's
You would honestly like Harbaugh. Let me just make that clear.
I love Jim Harbaugh. I was begging privately, quietly, that this owner would throw Scrooge McDuck money at his feet and at Michigan and hire him. That's who I wanted initially before Ron Rivera came here. I love Jim Harbaugh. And look, he's winning in Michigan now, so people can't shit on him for, oh, you can't beat Ohio State. It's like, all right, Hayseed, shut up. Harbaugh was a beast in San Francisco. He wasn't everybody's cup of tea. Him and Balky butted heads, but shit, you get over that. He came right in, and he got it done immediately. And they were a disaster. So, yeah, I mean, that's my Harbaugh pitch right there. Throw a lot of money at Harbaugh, see what happens. He flirted with Minnesota last year. Who knows?
Let me just give you kind of, you know, a history of some of the coaches who were interim before getting the full-time job. I'll go back to, I mean, there's just such a long list, but I'll go back to the start of the 2000 millennium. And Dick LeBeau for the Bengals didn't work out. He went 4-9 as interim head coach for the Bengals. You know, when he got the full-time job, didn't go really well. Went 8-24. Dave McGinnis with the Cardinals, he went 1-8. They gave him the full time job, and he went 16-32. Our good friend Nate Tice, his father Mike Tice, he got the interim job for one game for the Vikings. Got the full time job and did pretty okay. I mean, finished with a 500 record, 32-32.
Mike made a few playoff bursts, I think. He did all
right. He was probably the best of the bunch.
Yeah,
yeah. That he was the first coach in before 2000 to make the playoffs. Mike Singletary with the 49ers, who was 5-4.
I love this list. Okay, I'm settling in now. I got to hear this. Where's my popcorn?
13-18, no playoff appearances. Tom Cable, 4-8. You're making me laugh, dude. Stop.
Oh, I forget these people even exist. They're like NPCs. Tom Cable, yes.
A guy, okay, well, the next guy.
Yeah.
pretty interesting because he's already getting head coach consideration. Oh, he's gotten it for the past couple years. He's going to get it this year. It's Leslie Frazier.
Yeah.
When he was the interim coach of the Vikings, he went 3-3.
Yeah.
You know, the first year they didn't do so well, 3-13, but he made the playoffs 1 year with Christian Ponder as his quarterback.
He did. And he came into Carolina in 2011 and boat raced Ron Rivera. I mean, and yeah. I think Leslie's one of those guys, like kind of like Wilkes. Like, there's a little more to him than just a coordinator. Wilkes has been an associate head coach. Wilkes has been a head coach. So, I mean, yeah, Leslie's been around the block. I kind of like him.
Next guy, Jason Garrett. I would argue he was a pretty successful interim to head coach. You know, he went 5-3 as interim, replacing Wade Phillips at the time in 2010. And then after three straight seasons of going 8-8, he finally made the playoffs. But overall record of 85-67.
Wade was an interim too at one point early in his career. So, I mean, it's full circle.
And he made three playoff appearances. The next guy, Romeo Crennel, didn't do too well. This is with
Belichick
the Chiefs.
Guy. Yep.
2-3 or 2-1 interim head coach, and that included a game against the Packers, who I think were 15-1 that year.
Oh yeah,
but the next year, 2-14. One of those wins did actually come against Carolina after the tragedy of one of their players committing suicide.
Yeah, that was Belcher. That was terrible.
Yeah, that was 2012. 2015. Mike Mularkey, he was again a retread coach. He was a Titans. Pretty good record for Mularkey. He went to the playoffs 1 year with Mariota as a quarterback, but he finished with the winning record. Went 9-7 the first year, 10-6 the next, and 9-7 again. He deserves credit. He did a pretty good job there with Tennessee, but Tennessee wisely after the playoff berth, they moved on. They had the foresight to say, hey, Mularkey's done some good things. He's turned around our program, but we feel like we can get better things with Vrabel, and that certainly has worked out. Vrabel's been, an elite head coach.
Yeah, Vrabel and Saleh were like solid defensive hires, like guys that get the whole scope of what the team. And I feel like D'Amico Ryans, I hate to pigeonhole these guys, but he's kind of like one of the next guys up on that side of the ball. And, I really don't give a crap what – I mean, look at John Harbaugh. I mean, one of the most successful coaches. He was a special teams coordinator. You just got to be able to be the CEO. That's a good list, though. I mean, Tom Cable, Jesus. The Panthers have had a couple.
The only coach that I can think of that I look at this list.
Perry Fuel he didn't work out too well. He had a bad tenure here.
But he didn't become, he was interim, but he didn't become.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, good point. Sorry about that.
Marv Levy and Jeff Fisher are the only two coaches from this list that I see that worked.
It worked out. I mean,
but again, Levy was back in the 80s, Jeff Fisher, 90s.
Yeah, different structure back then.
But that's just kind of like where my point is coming from. Like, there's no, even when I give you that list, there's nothing in here that would suggest there's like a correlation. But for the most part, the names I just gave you, it doesn't really look great.
Let me ask you this. This is the question that, I mean, but performance right now does matter. I'll say that. Like, he's in that role. He's doing all the things that Matt Rhule was paid to do at a much lower rate, which is fine. But he's doing as good of a job, if not better a job, of managing that operation than Matt Rhule ever did. I'm going to say that, and all due respect, go kill it, Nebraska. That's where you belong. But I do wonder, like, for Tepper's standards and the kind of money he has and his vision, wherever that is now, seems to be heavily on music and soccer, and I would like it to get into the football championship realm because he's got the resources. I wonder if Steve Wilkes, if he had not been on this staff, would he be on anybody's radar for a head coaching job? And the answer is no, but it's situational, and he's in that moment now, and the guys like him. And sometimes that happens, but that's a really revealing list you brought up because that's a very, much like my argument about Matt Rhule, that's also a good argument that very few times has this really worked out. Like Dan Campbell was interim, but they didn't keep him, and then he resurfaced in Detroit, and jury's out on that, but yeah, I mean, I like Steve. I hate, and when people say, and I like, go hire an offensive coach, and maybe Wilkes will be the DC. I mean, that's kind of insulting to Steve. If he wants to do that, yeah, fine, I take that. But maybe Al Holcomb's been the secret sauce. I don't know. This is a decent team right now. They're on a decent stretch. They're playing better than the dog shit they had been playing earlier in the year, and the dog crap we had seen late last year. It's improvement, but I still don't know if if you got big time money, this is what you want your standard to be. Can Steve Wilks guide them to the playoffs with a competent quarterback? I'm sure he could. But Sean Payton's going to be sitting out there. Hey, Frank Reich is sitting out there, and I'm a big Reich guy, and I don't know how you feel about him, but I don't dislike Frank Reich. I think they could do a lot worse. Maybe they'll hire Jordan Gross like Jim Irsay did. They'll go hire Ryan Khalil. I have no idea. It's going to be an interesting offseason, I'll say that. And the thing with the front office too, man, because look out for Dan Morgan. He's going to get some phone calls eventually. He's already gotten those phone calls. Steelers interviewed him, and you're going to have to start filling some guys. And you know, Scott, I guess he's still safe, but we haven't heard any definitive, like, stuff from the owner at all. So it's, you know, mystery season right now.
Yeah, that's just kind of like where I want to finish this up here is, yeah, the reason why I'm, like, kind of reluctantly saying just give it to him is, again, number one, I don't believe the owner can find someone better. Like, unless it's, like you said, Jim Harbaugh or Sean Payton.
Not by himself, yeah. Unless it's a layup for an enormous amount of money that we all know we should. Anybody could do it, like Harbaugh, but to be nuanced,
if he's leading,
Marty Herney sitting in Matt Rule's driveway was not a winning formula. I'm sorry, I'll just say it, and that needs to be a better process this time if they're going to do it right.
For sure, and that's just why I'm like, I don't think you're not getting, you know, Sean Payton full stop. Period.
No, I agree.
Jim Harbaugh, like, yeah, if you can convince him, and you know, let's say just Michigan has another, you know, tough performance against Georgia, and he just realizes he's kind of maxed out Michigan's football program, then sure. Like, he was very close, supposedly, to getting that Vikings job.
Yeah. He's got the itch from what I've been reading and kind of hear through the grapevine. It's not anything substantial, but and it's certainly not Carolina-related. There's no ties here. He played here for, like, with our friend Luther Broughton for, like, two games, and Seifert wouldn't put him in, but that's his only connection to here, other than he came in here and curb stomped us in the playoffs. But yeah, I'd say aim for that if you're not going to keep Wilks. I mean, that's where you take your money and go spend, and spend it well with somebody who's proven they can friggin' do it, and go from there. Otherwise, you know, go get a coordinator and make him the head coach. Or I honestly,
yeah, I don't like trust that though. Like,
if I know
that's why you just keep Wilks if that's the case.
It's like it's like the Teddy argument we had. Like, you brought that up. Like, just keep Teddy so we don't bleed more here. It's like, I'm kind of like,
it doesn't work out with Wilks, which, I mean, with all due respect, I could see, like, you know, 6-11, 7-10 type seasons in the future. Then yeah, then you move on.
This division's about to take a shit. I mean it. Sorry, I mean, Dennis Allen is a disaster head coach. He always has been. I like his offense. I like his defensive mind, but his track record is atrocious. But then again, they play the Bucs this week, and he always shuts them out. So Bowles is weird there. That's a weird thing going on with Brady, and he's kind of looking up and down, and that was a bad loss at Cleveland. Atlanta, you know, I think Atlanta's got a lot of hope for the future. They've got some good things going on, but they're not without flaws. So, I mean, I don't know. It's a good time to sneak in there and get things figured out. The problem is all these mistakes they've made the past 2 years have delayed this, and the only thing you can do is just keep plodding along with the other mediocre teams in the South and get through it. It's not as depressing as it was. I mean, honestly, because they're showing some signs of life with their young guys, but they're still miles away because I have no idea who their quarterback is moving forward. No idea. And I have no idea in this draft who it will be and if it will work. There's no Trevor Lawrence to me. It's like Bryce is on top of everybody's chart right now, and Stroud's a popular name, and Hooker got hurt, and Levis has got some great tools, but who knows? And Allen kind of stunk early on, and then he developed, and people have got to be patient, but, like, damn, there's been a lot of patience right here. But do not go get any more veterans. Stop it. Russell Wilson, Baker Mayfield, all these guys, Matt Ryan, it's been a disaster for, like, all of them this year. Do not dip back into that well.
We haven't even seen, like, you know, how Deshaun Watson is going to return. So,
yeah,
you know, even if he doesn't play well, that's going to add more
data points. Brissett played pretty damn good now.
Yeah, Brissett's like Geno. You could just have him in a functional NFL offense. He'll look pretty.
Is Geno on a 1 year deal with Seattle?
Yeah, but don't see Seattle not re-signing him.
Yeah,
I mean
they got to roll with that. He's done fine. I don't even know if Fitter would. I think they just need to find a way to package whatever they need to move up far enough to be in that Herbert range they were just out of reach of and get a guy. And be damn sure you got somebody in that building that can develop him and, you know, maybe get another receiver. I don't know. Terrace is good, but you got DJ and Shy and Terrace, and that's kind of where you're at. Robbie, by the way, is not exactly burning it up in Arizona, so good on Scott for getting that done.
For sure. Anything else you want to pass on before we sign off for the week? Because they're off this week, and we're going to see them back in action against the Seattle Seahawks in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I guess final thoughts would be there's two schools of thought here. I get reminded all the time. There's two Johns here, and I hate to use that, but like I got to be kind of the broadcaster guy that keeps a positive spin on things, and that's what I do for iHeartRadio. In conjunction with the station that covers the team. So like the angle I take there is, look, let's look for something that can be used as a positive. And they were 3-8-1 back in 2014, and they kept winning games that were very winnable, and things fell into place. It's not unprecedented, and Steve Wilks was in the building for it. I'm not saying that's ultimately going to happen or even like reasonable to even be in that world. But let's face it, it's a game and a half back. You're on December 1st. At least you're still battling, and that's all I'll say. Playoffs aside, I'm not even thinking about it because you'll get one game and you'll probably get roasted. Who knows? But they played good football, sound football, in a game that, you know, I attended with, like I said, my boy, and he was happy. And it's a bye week. Seattle coming up. They gave up like 250 on the ground. I know that they're not an easy out, and that's a tough place to play. But I don't know if that's a terrible matchup for Carolina or not. I think that – that's a game they could go in, and that would be a valuable win. I say that carefully for some of our listeners because, like, shit, you just dropped down out of the top 10 in the draft. But I don't know. I'm just thinking of in terms of, like, guys I know around that building. Like, they're trying to scrap and fight, and my hat's off to them, man. They're playing hard, and they're coaching hard. And congrats to Matt Rhule. I mean, I just leave you with that. Like, Nebraska, 8-year contract. I think Trace Armstrong is his agent, and there's been just – way too much Matt Rhule overkill hate. I feel like I was part of that drum beat in the beginning, but really it was just fun and games. But he'll do a good job there, I'm sure. And he's got Marcus Satterfield. We were talking about that down here in the upstate. He poaches. Remember the OOU tweet? One of us. Certainly he meant it. He's one of mine. I'm coming to get him. And now Gamecock fans are like, oh, crap. But you know, hey, we'll see what happens. Good luck to Matt Rhule. Good luck to Nebraska. And enjoy the bye week.
Yep. Everyone enjoy the bye week. Still watch some World Cup. There's going to be some big college football games this weekend. So enjoy it, everyone. We'll see you guys next time.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.